Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio. And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Hello and welcome to the program for July 9, 2017, or the 15th of the Jewish month of Tammuz, 5777. I do hope that my listeners in the United States have had an enjoyable Independence Day. And if you are Jewish, I want to encourage you to celebrate your next one as a resident of Israel. I am Walter Bingham, and although I have no legal connection with the U.S., I did enjoy the 4th of July celebrations at the residence of the U.S. Ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, and I'll tell you all about it. Also in today's program, I shall review an unusual book by an activist for Israel. By contrast, you will hear about the anti-Semitism of the Chicago LGBT crowd, who I'm sure are not the only ones. Of course, the professional Trump haters will always make sure that their vile efforts to delegitimize the current U.S. administration make the news. And I'll cover some of that. By the way, they've even suggested that on the 4th of July, one should hang the American flag upside down. Would you believe it? Today's feature subject is the controversy about non-Orthodox prayer space at the Western Wall. I have long viewed the marches of the LGBT people with some disdain. Firstly, because I cannot understand the merit of flouting one's sexual preference, and secondly, because I suspect that other elements are using that pretext to hijack an existing organization like cuckoos in the bird world. No wonder in Yiddish they call them Fegele. But seriously, though, my suspicion has been proved right by the events during last week's Chicago annual Dyke March, an expression used for lesbians with masculine physical characteristics and a derivative of the LGBT marches. Some Jewish marchers were carrying their usual rainbow flags with a Star of David combining their gay pride with apparently their Jewish pride. And surprise, surprise, they were asked to leave because, quote, you are making people feel unsafe. You are putting them in danger by being here. One Jewish participant was told this by Chicago's Dyke Collective organizers. Why? Because she was carrying a rainbow flag with a single Jewish star. This march is a private event and you are offending the organizers of the event, another woman was told. Hear the rest of this after the break.
G'day, I'm Jono Vandor.
And I'm Ross Nichols.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind, a show that broadcasts all the weekly goodness that flows like milk and honey from the Holy Land straight into your ears with humorous and happy news stories.
New shows are posted every Thursday at 7 p.m. Israel time, highlighting the lighter side and advancing a positive view of Israel here on Israel News Talk Radio.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Jewish women were ejected from a lesbian march in Chicago because they were carrying rainbow flags with a Star of David in the center. Interestingly, it has not occurred to them that their march and rainbow flags offend large sections of the community. Although the Star of David has been a symbol of Judaism since the 11th century and has since then appeared on synagogues, Jewish artifacts and tombstones, and non-Zionist religiously observant Jews may even have it on their skullcaps, the anti-Israel lobby discounts all those facts and deems any association with the Magen David, the Star of David, as being a manifestation of Zionism and Israel. This shows once again that being anti-Israel equates with being anti-Jewish, and coming from the so-called all-inclusive LGBT camp displays bigotry and intolerance. Yes, I am opposed to the concept of an organization for the sexually deviant, or queer as they refer to themselves, but I must defend the right of all people to choose to belong, so long as their structure is within the law. The exclusion on ground of religion is cause for prosecution under existing U.S. and many countries' race legislation. I don't think I need to outline in detail the perception that is disseminated about Israel. Suffice to say that we are accused of being an apartheid state, an occupier of Palestinian Arab lands, and the oppressor of their people. Almost every week there are demonstrations in one or another country sponsored or supported by pro-Palestinian Arab NGOs. Most of the participants have never been to Israel to ascertain for themselves the relationship between Israel and its immediate neighbors, who fill our hospitals, who ride with us on public transport, and share all public places without harm or hindrance. Those demonstrators are following like sheep the pronouncements of vested interests, and I venture to say that if you ask them to place Israel on the map, many of them may have difficulty. Ironically, the Palestine that they promote is situated in the midst of the Arab Middle East, which is having convulsions that has so far cost the lives in Syria alone of 500,000 people, not to speak of Iraq, Yemen, and the rest of them, where ISIS burns people alive in cages, and worse, for not fanatically following their lifestyle. Do they really know what adding another unstable small state in the area would mean for its population? On the other hand, there is Israel, an oasis of democracy where all faith can follow their belief with absolute freedom, and where the holy places of all religions are protected by the state, and where Palestinian Arabs are members of the legislature and judiciary. That is the country they demonize. So today we want to talk about a book that was recently published and shows in a collection of short stories the real face of Israel, the humanitarian spirit of this tiny but successful country, of which former Prime Minister Golda Meir said, "We do not rejoice in victories, we rejoice when a new kind of cotton is grown and when strawberries bloom in Israel." The book is called United Nations, in which the author David Kramer lays bare the benevolent and altruistic sides of the nation of Israel that have been mostly hidden beneath years of censure and denunciations. I'm pleased to welcome to the studio David Kramer. Good to see you.
Good morning, Walter.
Israel is holding its own in international fora, or forums if you like, bringing attention to its many achievements in all sorts of fields, not least in medical science, a most important humanitarian field, as well as its immediate presence at most disasters anywhere in the world. So what started you to stress the humanitarian side of Israel at grassroots level, the involvement of ordinary people in a kind of tikkun olam, repairing the world?
My story began at the United Nations Durban conference almost 17 years ago. I will never forget walking into the opening ceremony and seeing 20,000 people that came from all over the world, all wearing a white t-shirt with the face of a young Palestinian boy, Mohammed al-Dura, who was allegedly killed by the Israeli army at the beginning of the Second Intifada. It was later proved beyond any doubt by several international investigations that this young Palestinian boy by no means was killed by the army. The people were holding banners, like you said, Zionism equals racism. Israel is an apartheid state. And the one that I remember the most was a Magen David equals swastika. And what I walked away from that conference was a collective understanding that the United Nations has created about this country, that Israel is a country that does not care about humanity around the world. I was left with incredible frustration from that conference that the story, the true story of Israel had not been told. I think since that moment, 17 years ago, I've dedicated my life to uncovering what is the true story of Israel. Okay, so 7 years ago, Walter, I established an initiative in Israel called New Campaign, which exposes Israeli charities from the grassroots organizations in Israel to people around the world. And for the past 7 years, I've spent my time meeting with countless individuals in Israel, people that are doing amazing work and impacting millions of people's lives around the world. And about 2 years ago, I decided that these were stories that certainly needed to be told. Against the perception about Israel as a country that does not care, and when you read the stories, you understand that this is a society made of individuals that very much care about what's happening around the world.
So for your book, you have chosen the format of very short episodes grouped under different aspects of life, showing true events that illustrate what I believe to be your mission. So how would you describe your mission?
My mission, Walter, is simple. I've been living in Israel for 20 years. I see the reality of this country on a daily basis, and I want people around the world to understand what Israeli society really is, who we are. And through a collection of short stories, which are very easy to read, I feel that I've brought a more realistic understanding of who Israel and our society really is.
So, as an old frontline soldier of World War II, I learned that during war, the aim is to defeat the enemy by killing as many as possible and by any possible means. The question of peace didn't, at that time, enter our minds. I'm therefore particularly impressed with one piece in the book entitled Code of Ethics, which quotes the chief of staff of the IDF at that time, writing to all soldiers that on the one hand, there is our need to hold a deterring sword against those who threaten to destroy us, and on the other hand, our continuous effort to establish peace. Quote, we fulfill this task with determination while preserving our morality as Jews, as Israelis, and as followers of the IDF's ethical code. The chief of staff, who was Gabi Ashkenazi at the time, does not encourage killing, but deterrence, not war, but efforts to establish peace. Now, if you compare that with the aim of usual combatants, the IDF stands head and shoulders above all other armies. In fact, this ethical code is usually hung in every commander's office, according to the book, as constant reminder of the IDF's values and guidelines. Can you briefly give me two examples of stories from your book that for you encapsulate the message of the book?
Sure. The one story is an interview with an Israeli Air Force pilot who describes his experiences flying above the skies of the Gaza Strip during the war. And he explains how he sees and he witnesses thousands of rockets coming in from Gaza into Israel. And yet he is given orders from his commanders that he is not allowed to retaliate because civilians are in the area of where the rockets are coming from.
I think he meant from.
And I think his interview very much sums up the dichotomy and the conflict that most Israeli soldiers face, as you've expressed. The other story, Walter, which is a personal story which I experienced during the war, was of a very good friend of mine, Sergeant Eyal Banin, a combat medic who served with me throughout my service. And on many occasions, I witnessed incredible humanity that he displayed towards people that had tried to take his own life. And unfortunately, Eyal Banin was one of the first soldiers that was killed in the Second Lebanon War when he was ambushed in a vehicle together with the two Israeli soldiers that were kidnapped. I included that story because for me it was symbolic of an army that goes out of its way and does its absolute maximum to protect civilian lives on both sides of the conflict, facing an enemy who has absolutely no regard for human life, both of their own and ours.
The body of the book is filled with several dozen photographs and posters. In what way do you think they help the reader?
Look, at the end of the day, I think a picture speaks more than 1,000 words. I could write as much as I want. For me, the inclusion of images was very, very important, both that the book appeals to young people, social media-driven generation, and it was very important that there's a visual element to the book as well, so that you see the story as much as you read the story. Look, Walk, if you look at Israeli society, today we have over 32,000 charities, which is more than any other country per capita in the world, which is both a good and a bad fact. It means that we have many problems on the one hand, but on the other hand, it shows a society that very much cares about the world. And as you said, Walt, in the beginning, Israel is always amongst the first countries to respond to international aid to countries around the world in need. And if you look at these two facts, you get the picture of a society that very much cares about what's happening in the world, which is in contrast to, I think, the image and the perception that many organizations are trying to create of Israel. And that's the purpose of the book.
At the end of the book, you have a chapter of advice to the educator. That's very unusual, isn't it?
For me, it's more than a book. I wanted the book to be a resource for people to explore the narrative. I don't think anyone needs me telling them what Israel is. I want people to understand it and explore the issues themselves. So I included a chapter which includes an educator's guide to use the book as an educational resource.
You also run an organization called NU. In the last 30 seconds that we have, what do those letters stand for and what is it all about?
You're walking in the streets of Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, Haifa, anywhere else in the country, and someone comes up to you and they say to you, Nu, okay, which is actually a Yiddish word. And the person's trying to get you to respond. They're trying to engage you. And so we created an organization to engage people and to get them to respond to important issues in Israel. We have an educational center in Jerusalem where we host tourist groups and we run educational programs. We run social activism workshops, and the point is to try and get people to take part in what we call the humanitarian spirit of Israel.
So is NU not an abbreviation, simply the word NU? A prompt.
That's what it is.
United Nations, subtitled The Humanitarian Spirit of Israel, is a much overdue clarion call for the Jewish nation to stand tall and by our actions disprove the fake news about Israel's human rights abuses. We should also stress to the Israel haters that people in glass houses should not throw stones. Where is the book available?
So we have a website, Walter, and the book is available for international purchase. The website is www.theunitednationbook.com. We send the book anywhere around the world.
David Cramer, thank you very much for coming to the program.
Thank you, Walter.
Why are so many non-Jews interested in Judaism? Why are they so curious? Did you know that the prophets of old prophesied about this? And it's happening now. I'm Rod Bryant, the voice of the righteous in the nations. If you want to understand this and much more, tune in to Israel News Talk Radio for Beyond the Matrix. News, views, and wisdom for the nations. Join us at my new time every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Israel time and 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Now to the topic of the week. No, it's not the rocket overspill from the war in Syria. It's not the controversy if former Prime Minister Ehud Olmert should or should not have been released from prison before he served his full sentence. Nor is it the lenient 2-year sentence for former Arab Knesset member Gattas, who entered jail this week for smuggling phones to Arab terrorists in prison. It's not even the historic first visit of a sitting Indian Prime Minister to Israel with its impending major defense contract. Of course, these are all matters that warrant comment and discussion. But this week's hot news centers around the Western Wall, in particular the government's earlier decision to establish an egalitarian prayer section, the ridiculous controversy of allocating an area in front of the main plaza of the Western Wall for mixed family prayer, because there's not enough space. And last week, the government voted to shelve a plan adopted in 2016 to set aside a portion of the Western Wall in Jerusalem for non-traditional mixed-gender religious services held by groups affiliated with the Reform and Conservative movements. If you are as confused as I am, I don't blame you, because there has been for some years an area further along the same wall known as Robinson's Arch, where such prayer services can be and are being and always have been held. Alas, it's not very frequently used. And if this matter were of such importance to the protagonists, the place should always be packed. Anyway, according to Interior Minister and Shas Party Chairman Aryeh Deri, the Prime Minister has announced upgrades and renovations of the site, and that project has been allocated 18 million shekel. But no, it's not the urgent desire for fulfilling the mitzvot, the commandments, as a mixed family unit. It's a game of influence and power. By the way, the charge by the liberal and conservative movements that the wall is not open to all Jews is patently false. No Jew, male or female, has ever been turned away from prayer in their respective area. Except those like the so-called Women of the Wall, a small group of noisy troublemakers dressed like men in prayer shawls, phylacteries, that's the tefillin, and skullcaps, who insist to enter the areas where the rest of the worshippers pray in quiet contemplation and provoke and read aloud with great aplomb from the Torah scroll that they invariably bring with them illegally. It would be interesting to learn if they fulfill all the other commandments that are incumbent on women. The Western Wall, the remnant of the retaining walls of the Temple Mount, is one of the holiest places in Judaism, until the time when the temple can be rebuilt on the top and today's Jews can again worship as our ancestors did. Until then, this wall that served generations before us is administered by the Western Wall Heritage Foundation, responsible for all matters concerning it. It operates under the auspices of the Office of the Prime Minister of Israel and the Government Companies Authority. The foundation's chairman is Rabbi Shmuel Rabinovich, who sees to it that the ordinances are adhered to and the necessary decorum is maintained. I bless the Prime Minister for having the wherewithal to side with authentic Judaism, said Knesset member Menachem Eliezer Moses of the United Torah Judaism Party. More than 10 million people, he said, visit the Western Wall each year. Everyone follows the established norms and honors the site and the accepted behavioral standards. I said earlier that there is a power game at play, orchestrated by sections of the American Jewish community who are using holy prayer to conduct their political agenda in Israel. Jack Rosen, the president of the American Jewish Congress, complains in a newspaper article that, quote, the chief rabbinate has authority over kashrut, that's kosher certification, Shabbat, Jewish burial, and personal status issues such as marriage, divorce, and conversion. Secular and non-Orthodox Israelis and diaspora Jews still smart under that agreement. Well, do secular and non-Orthodox Jews in the diaspora care about Shabbat in Israel? And if they do, they should keep their noses out of Israel's internal affairs. Their alternative is to make aliyah and take part in the voting. But they prefer the American lifestyle and at the same time tell us what to do. Please, Mr. Rosen, don't speak for Israeli Jews. He goes on to say, Americans and especially American Jews cherish their religious freedoms. Good, so you should. In America, Rosen claims that in one fell swoop it has the potential to alienate our youth and undermine the impressive success of the Birthright program in cementing the connection between young American Jews and Israel. Oh, please, as if our religious laws stop your youth from enjoying a free 10-day trip to Israel. In any case, there are very few religious concept trips in that program, and they are mostly conducted by Orthodox organizations. All the rest, just enjoy the country. I've spoken to dozens of American Birthright Trip participants, and the overwhelming majority would not consider Aliyah, and their reasons have nothing to do with religious observance. So discard that red herring. The total Aliyah from the United States with its 5 million Jews was less last year than that from France with barely 500,000. Are the Americans staying away because of the arrangements at the Western Wall? I don't think so. Do you? Any American Jew who's turned off from visiting Israel because of the religious arrangements at the Western Wall, please contact me. I want to record you and put it on air. Rosen quotes Chief Rabbi Lau, who reminds us that the destruction of the Second Temple was the result of Sinat Chinum, baseless hatred. But who hates the vast Israeli modern Orthodox establishment that welcome with open arms any Jew who makes Aliyah, regardless of their standard of religious observance, or Mr. Rosen's constituency who want to see Israel as a state like any other? Then there is Rick Jacobs, the chairman of the Union of Reform Judaism in America, who said that, quote, these decisions simply pushed diaspora Jews out, delegitimizing those who stand up every day against the BDS, UNESCO resolutions, and the delegitimization of Israel. No, Mr. Jacobs, we certainly appreciate the efforts of diaspora Jewry to defend Israel against the fake news merchants and delegitimizers. But after all, in the long term, you are defending yourselves. But what has that to do with who prays where at the Western Wall? It seems that anything goes to attack religious Judaism in Israel. You would do better to protect your constituents in America from leaving the fold. Recent surveys of American Jewry show that the conservative movement is in drastic decline. 80% of Reform Jews intermarry, and very few marry at all. with only a small percentage of those deciding to raise their children to be Jews, while Orthodox numbers are increasing. And now about the 4th of July party at the U.S. ambassador's residence. I believe it's the largest house in Herzliya Pituah. The garden is a park, and we were about 3,000 guests. A very large stage housed the orchestra, who were playing a lot of jazz, and food and drink were plentiful, and everybody who is anybody was there. Security was unbelievably strict, particularly because Prime Minister Netanyahu was also expected. And the President of Israel, Reuven Rivlin, mingled with the crowd. There was a ceremony with a flag party, who were the U.S. Marines, all highly decorated soldiers, and both the American and Israeli anthems were sung, and then everybody carried on talking, eating, drinking, until the speeches. In the meantime, I put my microphone literally under the noses of a few well-known personalities because the music was very loud. The first voice you hear is that of Ambassador David Friedman, our host, who with his wife Tammy by his side received all the guests personally before he joined the party.
How are you enjoying the party?
I've been indoors for the last 2.5 hours, but I hear it's great out here. I'm going to find out now for myself. I'm sure it's great. How are you enjoying it?
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Thank you.
You look terrific, by the way. I got to find out your secret for Arichat Yamim.
I'll tell you when we meet for an interview.
Thank you.
With me now is Mr. Mark Sell, who is the representative in Israel of the Republican Party of America. Probably a very happy man. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm delighted, and happy 4th of July to everyone, Americans and all friends of America around the world.
What do you think about the standpoint of the diaspora Jewry, particularly the American liberal and conservative Jews, about the problems we have with them about the prayer areas at the Western Wall?
I believe that the Jewish people, which may number 15 or 16 million people around the globe, can't afford to be fighting amongst itself about issues like the Western Wall and conversion and these other things. We need to unify. We need to be one people, because there are billions on this planet who would like to see us disappear. So I'm praying and hoping that we can find a way for all Jews, whatever their religious persuasion, to share in the holiness and the symbolism of the Western Wall.
But there is already a prayer area for mixed prayers at the Kotel. So what is the big problem?
As I understand it, is that many people in the government, who I also respect, believe that even in that area where the mixed prayers are going on, there should be limitations. And after a lot of people worked very hard over many years to achieve a compromise on this issue, and for many in the United States, the change of heart of the government was a surprise and a disappointment.
There's more of this after the break.
There was a time you didn't worry about terrorism. It was something that happened in a faraway place or to someone else. But now you want to know. Now you want to understand. Now you're afraid that you might be in the danger zone. You need to listen to Gadi Edelman on The Danger Zone every week, where you will find out the truth about what is going on in the world around you. Gadi Edelman on The Danger Zone, right here on Israel News Talk Radio.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Welcome back. Mark Sell continues.
And for many in the United States, the change of heart of the government was a surprise and a disappointment. Now, having said that, I've got to also say this. American Jews and diaspora Jewry cannot have their cake and eat it too. We need their support for Jewish life in all of the land of Israel, including in the old city of Jerusalem. And that means that as much as they want to come and share in the symbolism of the Western Wall, which is, according to the United States State Department, in, you know, still disputed territory, the American Jews should rally behind our community here in Israel and support the right of Jews to live and to pray and to raise their children not only near the Western Wall in the Old City of Jerusalem, but all over Judea, Samaria, the Golan, and the whole land of Israel. That's my prayer.
I suggested earlier in the program that if the American Jewry wants to have a say in how we conduct our prayers at the Western Wall, make Aliyah, you have a vote, and then you can...
Well, of course that's true, but we have to be sensitive to this. Israel is the homeland or potential homeland for Jews all over the globe, including North America.
Do you believe that Jews in the diaspora should have the right to vote here?
No, of course not. If they want to vote here, they have to come and become a citizen of Israel. That goes without saying. On the other hand, we need to listen to their voices. They have a right to express their opinions, and we listen to them because we need to care about them. We are a very small people, and we need to be united.
Axel, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Former U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman was among the guests, and I asked him how he felt about the widening gap between American Jewry and Israel over the Western Wall dispute.
My view is that we should, in the great tradition of our people, sit and talk and work it out, because when there's division among us, we're weaker than we should be. So we need open dialogue. I mean, I don't want to come here and, as we say, stand on one foot and tell Israelis what to do. But the reality is that when we make people feel separated from this country, Jewish people, it's not good for the country.
Do you think that American Jewry has a right to interfere in the affairs of Israel?
See, American Jewry feels devoted to Israel. A lot of American Jews love Israel. Not everybody. The ones who are protesting are the ones who care about Israel. And that's why we should worry about it and try to have conversation. The ones who don't care about Israel don't care what Israel does.
Thank you.
Yuval Steinitz of the Likud Party is Israel's Minister of National Infrastructure, Energy and Water Resources, and in charge of Israel's Atomic Energy Commission and a member of the Security Cabinet. I wanted to hear his opinion about the Western Wall problem.
We have to keep unity in the Jewish people, because we are all Jews, religious and non-religious, Orthodox and Reforms, conservative and ultra-Orthodox, we are all Jews. And therefore, we should try, make an effort to keep Jewish unity. And unfortunately, I was the only minister who voted against this decision on Sunday. I was trying to convince my fellows, ministers, and the prime minister that the implications, that the ramifications are going to be serious. I think it was a miserable decision. The good thing is that the Prime Minister immediately understood this had a very negative effect, and he appointed already a team to find a solution, and I'm confident that we shall find a solution.
Isn't there already a place for family prayer on Robinson's Arch? What's the problem?
Yeah, there was a place. And 1 year ago, the government accepted a compromise that even the ultra-Orthodox say that they can live with. I don't understand what happened since then, why we had to cancel or to stop this compromise.
Are you saying it's not operative now? Nobody can go on that platform?
No, I don't know even. I think that people can still approach it. I think it was a bad decision for no real reason. Because, you know, first, we are one nation. And second, this argument that most of the conservative and reform Jews are not here, they're in United States or Canada, and therefore they don't have a say, it's up for us to decide. I mean, it's true that it's up for us to decide to run the country and to run Jerusalem. But since we are claiming that Israel is a Jewish state, and that Jerusalem is not just the capital of the state of Israel, but the eternal capital of the Jewish people, we cannot ignore the wishes and sensitivities of 6 or 7 million Jews abroad.
Does that mean that they can dictate to us what we should do here?
No. It means that it's up to us. It's our responsibility. but that we cannot and should not ignore their ambitions and their sensitivities.
So, Sinus, thank you very much. Enjoy yourself.
Welcome.
I also spotted Professor Daniel Hershkovitz, former head of the Israel Home Party, now led by Naftali Bennett, and he is now the president of Bar-Ilan University. His reply to my question was almost like the others, non-committal and for Jewish unity.
I'm not sure that I know all the details, but what I'm saying is that the basic attitude of all sides should be that we are on the same side. We're not fighting against each other. Well, Jews who want, seek to be close to Hashem, close to the Kodem, I'm sure that a solution can be found in relatively easily.
And
so the diaspora against the Jews here.
It looks like it right now.
No. In fact, I'm not sure that you had a poll among the Jews who live in Israel, that majority would go with Agudah.
The Orthodox sector.
No, they wouldn't. Most of them wouldn't have any problems with the so-called Mitzvah Kotel. So I don't think it's really the diaspora. Now, it's true that some leaders that saw the potential of gaining some good, they took advantage of it. But it's not, I think, that a solution can be found easily.
And what shall we do with women of the wall?
They want to daven. Let them daven.
That means pray.
I understand from women who regularly go to the Kotel and that their davening disturbs the quiet and the kavanah.
They disturbed only the kavanah of those who want to be disturbed. What do? You come to the Kotel to seek to quarrel? You'll find the reasons to quarrel. If you come there to daven, you'll be able to daven. All the time, I go to the Kotel. So many people there, people dancing, people singing, Jews, non-Jews. I'm never bothered by the fact that people are attracted to the wall, even if they don't share my belief, even if they don't share my faith, even if they don't share my nationality.
Professor Hershkovitz, thank you very much.
Be welcome.
The minister who knows most about the subject is Tzachi Hanegbi of the Prime Minister's Likud Party. He is a prominent Israeli politician and national security expert and currently serves as minister in the Prime Minister's office in charge of national security and foreign affairs. Here I had hopes to get some definitive information.
I was appointed by the Prime Minister to try and help the parties to reach a common denominator, to find a solution. So we will begin dialogue very soon on both issues, the issue of the conversion legislation and, of course, the issue of the prayers at the hotel. And hopefully we will be able to get a progress done because we know how crucial this issue is for the unity of all Jewry, but especially the United States one.
What do you see as the main difficulty in reaching an agreement?
Well, I'd rather speak about the common ground and not about difficulties. The common ground is that everybody has the right to worship beliefs in the Kotel. Kotel belongs to all the Jewish people. There are, of course, different interpretations about what is the right thing to do, but we have a place for the Orthodox and we have a place for the Reform and Conservative.
Yeah, why don't they use it? Because it's not often used at Robinson's Arch. What's the big problem?
It is used for 15 years already. Yeah. Now the Prime Minister instructed his ministry to allocate millions and millions of shekels in order to make this place much more attractive. And hopefully it will happen soon.
What do you think about the American Jewish community, the Reform and Liberal Jewish community, trying to dictate here what we should do?
Well, I don't think they understand how much important is the American Jewish community to the survival and to the very existence of the State of Israel. But we will make everybody understand that we are committed to keep the Jewish people united.
Minister Hanegbi, thank you very much.
After a few words from the ambassador, Prime Minister Netanyahu had this to say.
Ambassador Friedman and Mrs. Friedman, David, Tammy, Sarah and I are so delighted to be with you and all the distinguished guests who are here. I have to tell you, David, your Hebrew is very good.
Thank you.
And I'll note that you had your bar mitzvah in Israel. I had my bar mitzvah in America. Well, you know, the twist of fate. But this is a great day. And I want to say first, happy birthday, USA. Today is a celebration of freedom and independence. It's a celebration of this most remarkable country, the United States of America. 3 years prior to America's independence, the Sons of Liberty gathered in Boston Harbor. They boarded tall ships and cast chests of tea overboard. The principle for which they fought, no taxation without representation, changed the world. Well, you know, I believe in limited taxation with representation. But this great idea, which brought into being all the philosophies of the Enlightenment and the ancient ideas of freedom born in this country, this brought together the United States, and on July 4th, 1776, the United States was born. A nation conceived in liberty, dedicated to the proposition that all men, they later added all women too, are created equal. 200 years later, to the day, on July 4th, 1976, I received the shattering news that my brother Yoni was killed, securing the freedom of the hostages held at Entebbe. This was the darkest moment of my life, and the life of my brother, most of all my parents, and I've always remembered the fallen sons of Israel, the grief that accompanies the parents of our young heroes, like Hadar Golden and Oron Shaul. And we are committed to bring them home. We will bring them home. 2 centuries separate July 4th, 1776 and July 4th, 1976. But to me, they are unified by a common ideal, the fight for freedom. I'm reminded of that parallel every year at this time. Israel and America are two bastions of liberty defending our common civilization. Today I stood on another tall ship, a tall ship of liberty. Tall is an understatement. It's huge, not only in length, but in bulk. The USS George H.W. Bush, a massive aircraft carrier, anchored just outside of Haifa. It's a floating piece of America. It's a floating island that helps lead the fight against ISIS. I told the members of this crew a few hours ago that Israel is also an aircraft carrier. It's an aircraft carrier for Western civilization, for the civilization of freedom. Our two democracies prize individual choice and respect for all. Ours are peace-loving peoples that seek neither war nor conquest. But we know, David, as you've just said, we know that for peace to endure, we must be prepared to defend it. And we must be prepared to defend ourselves against those who would seek to destroy us. It is ultimately not these magnificent ships or planes that keep us safe. It's the indomitable spirit of our people and the justice of our cause. I was so impressed, as was Sarah, when we stood there. And you must have seen this, David. You saw the great partnership between the American crew, the commanders, the pilots, the crew members, and their Israeli counterparts. You can see a real friendship, a real personal friendship that is born of these common ideals. And that bond between us was so evident in the historic visit of President Trump to Israel. President Trump was the first U.S. president who chose to make his first foreign trip to Israel. We will always remember that. His speech at the Israel Museum left an indelible mark. I've spoken to many Israelis. They said they were so uplifted by the speech, by the spirit of friendship, the spirit of solidarity that the president expressed with Israel. We were all moved by that. And when the president decided, as the first U.S. sitting president, to visit the Western Wall, and he touched those stones, he touched our hearts. As did First Lady Melania, as did Jared and Ivanka. And I want to take this opportunity and say, I am committed, and I remain committed, to making every Jew feel at home in Israel, including at the Kotel, including at the Kotel. All we need is patience and perseverance. Patience, perseverance, and courage is what the founders of America had in abundance. I recently read an extraordinary biography of George Washington. What a leader he was. I never realized that at the height of his battle against the British Empire, the maximum number of troops that George Washington commanded was 18,000. That's it. That's it. You can imagine how much resilience and how much courage this man had, and it represents the spirit of America ever since. July 4th is a celebration of the victory of American values, a victory for freedom, a victory for independence, a victory for hope. Today we rededicate ourselves to victory. Victory over barbarism, victory over terror, victory over tyranny. Our two nations stand shoulder to shoulder, as we have countless times before, in our noble fight for freedom. May God bless Israel. May God bless the United States of America. Happy 4th of July, America. Thank you.
A magnificent firework display ended the evening. UNESCO, the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, has long ago found the formula to justify its raison d'etre. It is in part to assist the Palestinian Arab establishment in exploiting the internationally recognized official standing of UNESCO for political motives. Not long ago, they have voted down Israel's connection with Jerusalem and the Temple Mount. This week, the tail has again been wagging the dog by securing a vote to define Israel as an occupying entity in the old city of Jerusalem and to condemn archaeological digs in Jerusalem. To substantiate their claim that the Jews have no connection to the Cave of the Patriarchs in Hebron, they needed to submit further evidence because they only traced ancient history to the Mamelukes, Arabs, in the late 12th century, totally ignoring Jewish presence since the early Bronze Age, 2,000 years earlier. The UNESCO Heritage Committee will vote about this today, Friday. The continued deceptions of UNESCO won't change the Jewish connection to Jerusalem or the reality in Jerusalem, said Education Minister Naftali Bennett, adding that Jerusalem was the capital of the Jewish nation well before Islam came into the world, and it will remain the capital of Israel forever. Instead of protecting the hundreds of sites being destroyed by extremist Islam, UNESCO chooses to act against the only country in the Middle East which protects all holy sites and allows freedom of worship. The Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs released this statement. This is another absurd and irrelevant UNESCO decision which serves only the enemies of history and truth. Jerusalem is the internal capital of the Jewish people, and no UNESCO resolution will change this reality. The decision is sad, unnecessary, and pathetic. And it should be noted that the resolution did not even achieve a majority of the votes. 10 countries voted for the resolution, 3 opposed it, and 8 abstained. A good statement by the Foreign Ministry, but I note that they did not say the undivided capital. That is significant. Now to the inevitable subject of the sustained, ill-informed campaign to depose the President of the United States, Donald Trump. The mainstream media like NBC, CNN, and similar just cannot stomach it that the President ignores them as purveyors of White House news and communicates directly with the people by social media and daily briefings by his spokespersons. It doesn't matter what measures he wants to introduce to safeguard the security of the United States, the supporters of Hillary Clinton will oppose it on principle. to the extent that to all sensible people, theirs are policies that would destroy the country from within. I am, for instance, referring to their wide-open immigration proposals. I cannot understand how ordinary Americans who accepted the treasonous email scandal of Clinton without taking to the streets are now objecting to Trump's sensible efforts to protect the U.S. borders in light of the European experience. Theirs really is a suicidal policy. If the president's proposed security measures would be obstructed, I do hope that in campaigning for his second term, he will not have to say, "I told you so." And finally, just in case you haven't heard, a private Haredi school, that's ultra-Orthodox for want of a better term, with 220 students in East London in the UK, is set to close after it failed its third inspection last month since February 2016. So where did they fall below the standard? The school, which teaches Haredi girl ages, wait for it, 3 to 8, was reported as not giving students a full understanding of fundamental British values because they do not teach the LGBT agenda. Perhaps the head of the school's authority is a queer, or perhaps even a paedophile who should be sacked. Just imagine teaching 3-year-old girls about sex and that there are men having sex with each other and that some children don't have a mummy, but 2 daddies instead. If these are the British values, I am glad to be out of there. Jewish law does not approve homosexuality, especially sodomy, and only recognizes a marriage between an unrelated man and woman as a legitimate way to build a family. But according to the Office of Standards in Education, Children's Services and Schools in the UK, the girls, quote, are not taught explicitly about issues such as sexual orientation. This, they say, restricts the pupils' spiritual, moral, social, and cultural development and does not promote the equality of opportunity in ways that take account of differing lifestyles. Restricting moral development by teaching immorality? That's a good one. Well, I have to tell you that I am lost for words, a very rare occurrence for me. Perhaps you want to comment. Here is my thought for the week. Among Jews, we must expand the definition of we and shrink the definition of they. That's all I have time for. I hope to be here again next week with more news, views, and interviews from Israel and the rest of the Jewish world. So until then, this is Walter Bingham wishing you a good week, and please do not neglect your elderly neighbor or even family member. You can make their day by dropping in to see if they need anything and even have a little chat. Remember, you too will get old one day, and loneliness is a killer. Goodbye.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.